right after the international news.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Ladies first on Thursday's show. This is a busy week in the qualifying competition for next year's Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament in Morocco. There were qualifying matches played across Africa on Wednesday. In the most lopsided result, Algeria trounced visiting Sudan 14-0. Yes, you heard me right, 14-0. Naimi Bouhenni had four goals for the Algerian ladies in Algiers. The national women's football teams from Ivory Coast, Kenya, and South Africa also scored big victories on Wednesday. The Ivorian ladies trounced host Niger 9-0. The Kenyan women cruised past South Sudan 8-0 in Nairobi. And the South African women beat host Mozambique 7-0. In other results, Uganda defeated visiting Ethiopia 2-0. Burundi beat host Eritrea 5-0. Djibouti won by walkover against Rwanda after the Rwandan team withdrew from the qualifiers. Djibouti automatically advances to the second round. Malawi and visiting Zambia drew 1-1. Namibia scored a 2-1 road victory against Tanzania. Host Zimbabwe beat Eswatini 3-1. Botswana scored a 5-1 road victory against Angola. Tunisia topped host Egypt 6-2 in Cairo. Congo Brazzaville beat visiting Gabon 2-1. Cameroon edged Central African Republic 1-0 in Douala. Senegal scored a 2-1 road victory against Liberia. Mali and visiting Guinea drew 2-2. Guinea-Bissau edged visiting Mauritania 1-0. Burkina Faso beat Benin 2-1. That match was played in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. The Super Falcons of Nigeria, 11-time African champions, beat visiting Ghana 2-0 in Lagos. And I know that result pleased the American coach of the Super Falcons, Randy Waldrum.
Sporty greetings. This is Randy Waldrum, coach of the Super Falcons of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Coach. There will be more first-round Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifying matches next week. The second round is scheduled for February 2022. And after that stage, a total of 11 teams will join host Morocco at the Africa Women's Cup of Nations tournament, which will be held in July 2022.
Voice of America!
Ghana is getting high marks for its first ever staging of the African Swimming Championships. The Bukom International Pool in the capital, Accra, was the venue for the recent competition. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2021, Yawafusu Larbi in Accra reports South Africa topped the medals table. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The curtains have drawn down in Accra at the 14th Kana Africa Seniors and Juniors Swimming Championships, with South Africa and Egypt the biggest winners of the competition. The competition, hosted at the Trust Sports Emporium, saw over 400 swimmers in the capital of Ghana for the week-long event, which ended on October 17. At the end of the championships, 11 new records were set, with South Africa and Egypt showcasing their prowess in the water, winning a combined 197 medals in the juniors and seniors events. South Africa topped the medal table with 57 overall. One of their 24 gold medals in that haul included a record-breaking one from Martin Bindel, who took apart a 13-year-old record in the men's 200-meter backstroke previously held by countryman George Durand.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, it's been a long month for me, coming off the FINA World Cups in Europe, you know, Berlin, Budapest, a lot of hard racing, short course obviously as well, so it's come here, you know, it's always a huge honour representing my country, and I mean, I know it was a 12-year record, so obviously really excited. George Durant is someone I look up to. He's a personal friend of mine, you know, being the African 200-meter backstroke record holder, long course. It's someone I try, kind of, that's been mentoring me for quite some time. So I really look up to him. So to have gotten that record, ecstatic.
The championship, though, truly belonged to Rebecca Medere, who won an astonishing 11 gold medals, the most by a single athlete at these games, and along with it, the prize for the best female swimmer of the competition.
We're feeling a little bit rough, but yeah, that's where all the hard work and the training comes into play. I mean, if you're used to finishing the week off strong and finishing the week off hard and fast, your racing will come through like that. So it's just about building racing endurance now, and that's what this gala is about.
Amidst the dominance of South Africa and Egypt, though, there were some other stories of triumph. Cape Verdean teenager Jayla Pina won her country's first ever medal in the swimming championship, storming to a bronze in the women's 100-meter breaststroke. It is a medal she believes will help propel her career to the next level.
Yeah, this is definitely a big step for me and definitely for my country, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the future.
Host country Ghana finished with just 2 medals at the end of the competition, but it was their efforts off the pool that truly captured people's imagination. Only given the nod in June this year to organize the championship, Ghana had only 3 months to pull off the competition, and they delivered spectacularly, even drawing praise from General Secretary of the Confederation of African Swimming Associations, Mohamed Diop.
We are very happy. First, because it is in the difficult time, in the COVID pandemic, it's not easy to organize some things. And also, the federation decide to combine junior and senior championships. Why? It will be a difficult challenge. But the Federation of Ghana organized this competition, and we're happy.
All of the credit belongs to the folks at the Ghana Swimming Association, led by its president, Delphine Akwey, who explains why Ghana was trusted with organizing the competition in such short notice.
So we are very honored to host all the 42 countries as the Ghana Bureau members here for this competition. And we bid for this competition earlier in the year. And surprisingly, not to us though, they gave it to us because of what we did last year. Last year we hosted successfully the Ghana Zone 2 Championship. And I think they were impressed with us, you know, with the Ghanaian hospitality, and we like to do things well. So they saw that, well, if this comes to us as well, they had no doubt that we'll be able to manage to host this successfully.
Ghana has definitely outdone themselves, putting together one of the best Ghana swimming championships in history. One, the athletes say they have truly enjoyed.
I've really enjoyed my experience. It's actually my first like African champs that I've been to. So I've actually really enjoyed the whole experience altogether. And the pool is such a nice pool.
It feels great. I've never been here before. Really awesome country, really nice people and very friendly. We're very grateful for Ghana. And the whole Egyptian team has been saying the same things I'm saying. So we're really excited for a great championship.
Yeah, the people are so friendly and just, yeah, they treat you really, really well and nicely. So I've enjoyed the hospitality here in Ghana, which definitely helps when it comes to the racing. And yeah, this pool's beautiful.
From Ghana, the Ghana Swimming Championships move to Tunisia next year. But before that, many of the African swimmers from this competition will immediately turn their attention to the FINA Championships in Japan, where they will not only be competing for their individual countries, but for the whole of Africa. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yalfu Sulabi in Accra.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including reaction from across the political spectrum to former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's death. Democrats and Republicans alike lauded the four-star general as a giant of public service and an American hero. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. In UEFA Champions League football action Wednesday, Portuguese superstar Cristiano Ronaldo scored a late goal to lift Manchester United to a 3-2 come-from-behind victory against visiting Atalanta of Italy. Ronaldo put Man U on top in the 81st minute after goals from Marcus Rashford and Harry Maguire. Maguire described Ronaldo's game-winning header like this, and I quote, "His leap, his timing, it was the perfect header." And Man U's manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, says Ronaldo answered many of his critics with his performance.
"I was really, really pleased with how he led the line. As a centre forward, we asked him to run the channels, drop in, press more because we're at home, of course. We want to get the crowd behind us. He even was down on his inside his own 6-yard box and blocked towards the end, defending. You can see him sprinting. He did everything a centre forward should be doing, leading the line and defending. So, and of course, the goal is just what he does better than most."
Solskjaer has faced some criticism himself after Man U's 4-2 loss Saturday to Leicester City in the English Premier League. He points out one area where the club needs to improve.
"Yeah, we need to defend better. I know that. And we need to defend key moments better. As Simon, the other Simon, just said, it's perceived that we are so inconsistent in performance, general performance, when you concede easy goals. Today, another couple of easy goals, and that we need to eradicate that because we are playing against very good teams in the next few weeks."
One very good team is Chelsea, the reigning European champion and the current Premier League leader with 19 points. Defending champion Chelsea cruised to a 4-0 win against Sweden's Malmo Wednesday, but lost strikers Romelu Lukaku and Timo Werner to injuries. In other UEFA Champions League results from Wednesday, Barcelona beat visiting Dynamo Kiev 1-0, while Bayern Munich scored a 4-0 road victory against Benfica. Villarreal defeated Young Boys 4-1. The Austrian club Red Bull Salzburg beat Germany's Wolfsburg 3-1. Lille and Sevilla played to a scoreless draw. And Juventus scored a 1-0 road victory against Zenit St. Petersburg, thanks to an 86th-minute goal by the Swede Dejan Kulusevski.
"Sporty greetings. This is Chairman Christian Chukwu, former captain of national team Green Eagles, former coach of Super Eagles, former coach of Kenya national team, former coach of Safa of Lebanon. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you."
Thank you, Chairman. As I mentioned earlier, Senegal defeated host Liberia Wednesday 2-1 in a qualifying match for next year's Africa Women's Cup of Nations football tournament in Morocco. Moses Garzio joins us now from Monrovia, Liberia, with a post-match report. Sporty greetings, Moses!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The bookmakers, who have been right for predicting an obvious win for Senegal against Liberia in the tour. The intensity of the match and color, however, proves otherwise. Apart from the result, the Teranga Lions took lion's share of possession in the opening half hour, but couldn't create some clear-cut chances. The Senegalese were, however, gifted after goalkeeper Massa Kone failed to deal with a Ndiaye Awadiakete corner, only to see Mama Diop head in to put her side in front on 31 minutes. Coach Vabo Lati's Liberia searched for an equalizer, while the home supporters biting their fingers as it team lacked the cutting edge in the final third, thanks to an experienced and defensive-minded Senegalese team that kept their opposition at bay until Ndiaye Awadiakete coolly struck from 6 yards after some sloppy defending from the Liberian fullbacks to make it 2-0 in the 85th minute. The home supporters, however, welcomed the final whistle with some smiles after substitute Lucy Keke scored a stunning 25-yard free kick 2 minutes into added time. The goal was not enough to secure at least a draw for Liberia, but the performance from the ladies inspired Coach Rabo Latte.
What I did was to inspire my team, the young girls. You know that young girls, they just come here, some of them are the first time playing international games as compared to our Senegalese counterpart. They have mature people that have some professional in their team. But be as it may, I make them to understand that football is football. Anything can happen at any given time. All you need to do is to go out there and showcase your talent.
The Liberian coach is not, however, writing his team off a qualification place ahead of the return fixture in Dakar next week.
It's a do-or-die game because we are going all out because we lost 2-1 in our own backyard. So it means that when we go over there, we're going to play more attacking game than defending game. But we are looking around because probably maybe the next leg we'll have some professional or foreign-based player in our team. So we're looking towards that day. But I can assure you, all is not yet over, all is not yet lost. We can go to Senegal and cause havoc for them.
The result means Senegal is going to the next fixture with a 2-1 advantage in their home stadium. The Lioness coach Bousari Diaby saw one of the big lows about his team performance against Liberia.
I'm not happy the way the girls, my girls, play today. They are not playing the way they know. They can do better. I'm sure they can do better. You don't have to take this goal in this match. And we are doing some mistakes, but we have to correct it. We'll do the best. We'll do the job to win the second half in Senegal.
A furious Diaby said to compete at the highest level in female African football, his side needs to step up performance.
If you want to play a role in Africa, you don't have to play the way you don't today. You have to go up, and I know they can do it, but we have to correct. I think it will be the second match in Senegal. It will be better than this one.
The next fixture takes place in Dakar on Tuesday, October 26, when Liberia takes a last gasp at the qualification place at the 2022 Women's Africa Cup of Nations. The Lone Star squad leaves Monrovia on Friday for the Senegalese capital. For the Sunny Silo Sports, this is Moses Gazier in Monrovia.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. Egypt and Liverpool football star Mohamed Salah recently scored his 104th career English Premier League goal. And in the process, Salah tied former Chelsea star Didier Drogba for the most goals scored by an African player in the EPL. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted African football analyst Emmanuel Okara.
I want to start by congratulating Mohamed Salah for hitting the epochal milestone of 104 EPL goals scored on day 8 of the ongoing season to equal Didier Drogba's 104 EPL goals, which he scored during his time with Chelsea Football Club. From the way things are, just match day 8, Salah may likely hit 120 EPL goals, barring injuries, Nations Cup assignment, and the loss of form. And the way it is, the Egyptian can literally set to be on fire and Liverpool stands to benefit from it immensely. And not only that, the pattern of play Liverpool has adopted, the direct approach, so to speak, has made it possible for Salah to score, and the best is yet to come for the prolific Egyptian goal merchant.
Another African player, Sadio Mane, also of Liverpool, has scored 100 Premier League goals. Is it a sign of good things to come for African players in the English Premier League?
I'm not too surprised that Sadio Mane has equally clocked his 100th EPL goal. And the way it is also destined to go places this season. He might also surpass Didier Drogba's 104 EPL goals scored during his time as Chelsea. And the Senegalese is also chasing his compatriot, that is Mohamed Salah, as his African compatriot, Mohamed Salah. And the way it is, both players are working in a symbiotic manner. The two goals scored in the past two matches by Sadio Mane came through assists from Mohamed Salah. Before this time, many felt that there was a grudge between both players, especially on the part of Sadio Mane, who felt that Salah would not pass to him. Now Salah is serving him sumptuous balls and is scoring. And the way it is, it's going to be a neck-and-neck competition for the EPL Golden Boot. At the end of the day, Liverpool Football Club would benefit immensely and may likely carry the EPL league title this season.
It's like the 2020-2021 Golden Boot Award in the English Premier League would be a horse race between Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane of Liverpool, and Romelu Lukaku of Chelsea, all players of African descent. What's your take on this?
For now, we'll say the race is between Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, and Romelu Lukaku. Even though he plays for Belgium, he's of African descent. And right now, Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane are ahead of Romelu Lukaku. But it's going to be a neck-and-neck two-horse race between Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane. And the beauty of it all is that Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane are working in a symbiotic manner to ensure that their team gets the necessary points at stake, not minding each person's individual ambition for the season. So the season looks very interesting. Harry Kane may join the party at the end of the day, but this season, I don't think Harry Kane would win the Golden Boot. I just want to wish all the players the very best in the days ahead.
That's African football analyst Emmanuel Akara. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Coming up, a conversation about the Arab press in the United States. We talk with Edmund Gharib, an internationally recognized expert on U.S.-Arab relations, the Middle East, the Kurds, American media, and the Arab diaspora in the United States. Edmund Gharib talks about his forthcoming book on the Arab press in America. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Carol. An update now on the Major League Baseball playoffs here in the USA. The Atlanta Braves and the Houston Astros both posted victories Wednesday, and both teams are now one win away from advancing to the World Series. The Braves beat the defending World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers on Wednesday, as we hear now from the AP's Mark Myers.
It's been 22 years since the Braves last appeared in the World Series, but now they need just one more win after crushing the Dodgers 9-2 to take a 3-1 series lead. But manager Brian Snitker knows closeout games can be difficult.
Winning a game is hard, especially a veteran team like this that we're playing. And number one, it's hard to win here. Number two, it's hard to win a major league game.
Atlanta erupted for four homers with Eddie Rosario slugging two and driving in four runs. Drew Smyly was the winner over Julio Urias. Mark Myers, Los Angeles.
Thanks, Mark. Now let's go to Boston, where the Astros beat the Red Sox, as we hear now from the AP's Gethin Coolbaugh.
Yordan Alvarez and Framber Valdez teamed up to move the Astros one win away from the World Series after a 9-1 Game 5 win over the Red Sox. Alvarez had a first-inning solo homer and added a two-run double in the Astros' 5-run sixth inning. Houston starter Valdez tossed 8 innings of one-run, three-hit ball with 5 strikeouts. Astros manager Dusty Baker says his team's Game 5 fate was in good hands.
This was, in the hands of Framber. And really in the hands of Alvarez, and then everybody else, contributed.
Rafael Devers had a solo homer in the seventh for the Red Sox after starter Chris Sale allowed 4 runs and struck out 7 in 5 1/3 innings. Gethin Coolbaugh, Boston.
Thanks, Gethin. The United States says it's bidding to host both the men's and women's Rugby World Cup tournaments in the next 10 years. Joining us now with that story is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. USA Rugby has formally launched its bid to host the Men's Rugby World Cup in either 2027 or 2031 and the Women's Rugby World Cup in 2029. This marks the first time any nation has bid on both the men's and women's Rugby World Cup together. USA bid chairman Jim Brown made the announcement during a Wednesday news conference in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C.
It's really an exciting day for us. It's really a proud moment for us to share with you some of the formal work that we've been doing and certainly the progress we've been making on the bid side of preparing to submit a bid and potentially host in the future one or two Rugby World Cups here in the United States of America and the Americas in general.
The bid includes several U.S. cities, including New York, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Washington, D.C., and sporting venues that feature state-of-the-art technology. The Men's Rugby World Cup tournament has yet to be staged in North or South America, and Jim Brown says the time has come for the United States to be the first country in the Americas to host the event.
I think the growth of the event has gone to the point where it's a very attractive opportunity to host, and it's also a very attractive opportunity for World Rugby to go to another market like the United States, similar to Japan, which we trust, if done well and delivered properly and packaged the right way, could help boost not only rugby in the United States, but rugby globally.
American rugby footballer Phaedra Knight is a former member of the U.S. Women's National Team and a member of the World Rugby Hall of Fame. She says staging the World Cup tournaments in the United States will not only help grow the sport, but pique the interest of a younger generation as well.
As a former player, it would mean everything to be able to host the pinnacle of our sport. It would mean so many things from, a grassroots growth perspective. Youth, obviously, we have much more youth activity than we did, say, 10 years ago. But this would provide for them really that vision, right? That impetus to really get at it and engage in the sport, whether they wanted to play at the highest level or referee or just continue in just the good graces of rugby.
In 2018, San Francisco in the U.S. state of California hosted the Men's Rugby World Cup Sevens tournament, and its success established the United States as a viable location to stage large rugby events. And Phaedra Knight says the current bid in the U.S. could leave a lasting legacy for the sport in America and abroad.
I think one of the biggest opportunities is to bring in a substantially larger fan base. There are so many people that know rugby but don't really know rugby. And all they have to do is just really get that little sip of it, by having a World Cup here. I think that would make all the difference in the world. It did it for Sevens when we hosted the Sevens World Cup in San Francisco. I absolutely believe it would have a very similar effect and a greater effect with the World Cup 15s.
And while the United States makes its case to host one or two Rugby World Cups over the next decade, Australia is currently considered a front runner to host the event in 2027. The city of Vancouver in Canada is also under consideration. A final vote will take place in May 2022. However, the stage is set for the next women's competition to be held in New Zealand in October 2022, and the next Men's Rugby World Cup is scheduled to take place in France in 2023. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thank you, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the October 21st edition of the show. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sonny Sonny.